David Duchovny, who starred as FBI agent Fox Mulder for 9 years on The X-Files, is returning to television, starring in a new dark comedy on Showtime called Californication. Duchovny plays Hank Moody, a novelist suffering from writer's block who indulges in booze, drugs, and plenty of sex. Let's listen to a scene from the show. Duchovny's character and his ex-wife, played by Natasha McElhone, are meeting their 12-year-old daughter's teacher.
I'm happy to report that Becca is a delightful student. Smart, inquisitive, full of life.
Yet I sense a big Harry lurking somewhere around the corner.
This is my life.
No, it's okay. He's right. But I'm slightly worried about her emerging sexuality.
Oh, thank God. She's a lesbian. Thank God.
What are you talking about?
I think we can all agree, by and large, that men are assholes.
I, for one, am happy that she prefers the fairer sex.
It looks like we're the proud parents of a lesbian daughter. Up high.
Celebrate.
Come on, don't leave me hanging.
What?
You're ashamed of our gay daughter?
What happened to your eye?
Okay, hold on a second here, folks. Becca is not a lesbian.
She's not?
No, based on what I've seen, no.
Then why are we discussing her sexuality?
Because it seems she very recently have discovered the attention of boys.
Well, she's beautiful.
She takes after her mother. The makeup and the slutty clothes.
David Duchovny didn't follow a typical route to Hollywood. After growing up in New York and attending a prep school on a scholarship, he graduated from Princeton and was getting a Ph.D. in English at Yale before deciding to move to California and pursue acting. After minor parts in several movies, Duchovny found stardom on The X-Files. I spoke to Duchovny in 2005. You, of course, are known to most of America as Agent Mulder from The X-Files, which, you know, became, you know, an incredibly successful show. It was, I think, called by one writer in the New York Times the defining series of the 90s. And it developed a cult following of sorts. And I wonder if you, you know, feared that you might forever be associated with this. You might become, you know, a Leonard Nimoy, who we always expect to be a Vulcan with pointed ears somehow.
I never really did. I mean, I think that I don't want to compare us to Star Trek, but I think what separates the two shows is Star Trek was somewhat campy, I guess. And The X-Files always seemed to me kind of cinematic or filmic, and the drama realistic. And therefore, I thought that, yeah, playing a character is playing a character, even though I'm playing him every day for 8-9 years. And that eventually, after the iconic significance of that character fades away in public memory, then I'll be allowed to move on. And if I'm not, it's mostly my fault for not working harder and for not being more imaginative. And if I'm not there, it's just testament to the power and the quality of the show.
Well, you know, we looked at, as I was preparing for the interview, I looked at two X-Files episodes which you wrote and directed. And when the first one popped up, you know, I hadn't seen an X-Files episode in a long time, but I actually remembered this one. I mean, it really stuck in my head. And it's about a baseball player in the Negro Leagues in New Mexico in the 40s who could easily be a big league player but always avoided playing well before scouts because it turns out he's actually an alien who's come to Earth as part of a plan of conquest but fell in love with the game of baseball and went native. And became a ball player because he loved the game of baseball. Where did that story come from?
It was 98 when McGuire and Sosa were having their home run race, and baseball was on everybody's mind. And there was a an article in the New York or the L.A. Times about a minor leaguer, and I can't remember his name, but he hit more home runs than anybody. He hit 70-some home runs for the Nevada something or others. So I thought, well, here's a guy in the desert near Area 51 who's hitting all these homers, and he's unknown. And I just started to kind of meditate on that idea. And then, you know, also the Roswell happened the same year that Jackie Robinson went to the bigs. So I thought that was an interesting coincidence to try to play with, and everything started to fall into place from there. And I liked playing with the ideas of aliens and alienation from society, and I thought it all kind of worked and came together thematically. And then then the plot came.
Yeah, no, and it worked well because there's actually an alien bounty hunter trying to track him down and bring him in for having deserted his kind. But I want to listen to a little piece of a clip of that episode. This is early on when you, Agent Mulder, are with Agent Scully, and you're going over records from newspapers in New Mexico, and she notices that you've actually been looking at some baseball scores. Let's listen.
Mulder, you cheat. I can't believe it. You've been reading about baseball this whole time.
I'm reading the box scores, Scully. You'd like it. It's like the Pythagorean theorem for jocks. It distills all the chaos and action of any game in the history of all baseball games into one tiny, perfect, rectangular sequence of numbers. I can look at this box, and I can recreate exactly what happened on some sunny summer day back in 1947. It's like the numbers talk to me. They comfort me. They tell me that even though lots of things can change, some things do remain the same. It's
boring. Mulder, can I ask you a personal question?
Of course not.
Did your mother ever tell you to go outside and play?
That's a nice little piece of dialogue. Do you remember that? Do you remember where it came from?
That came from my heart, really. You know, I love box scores. I look at them over and over. Not so much anymore because I don't follow baseball so much, but there was something about the numbers and the box score and the fact, you know, my wife would say, you know, how do you read that? What are all those little notations and numbers mean? And it's really not that complicated, but it appears to be some kind of mystical, you know, sequence of numbers and letters. And I always felt it.
What did get you out of academia and into Hollywood?
Well, when I was getting my PhD, I always had the sneaking suspicion that I was in the wrong place and that while I could have been, I think, a good teacher, I would always be a mediocre academic. And I wasn't ready at the age of 22 or 23 to resign myself to mediocrity. I wanted to try to find something that I could be better than mediocre at. So that doesn't sound very nice, but I was looking for an out.
And
as I said, I started writing, and if I thought I would write stage plays, I thought I should learn how to speak the words that I was going to write.
You've had a series of memorable appearances on a lot of sitcoms. I mean, The Simpsons and Sex and the City. And there was one that I really loved on The Larry Sanders Show, where Gary Shandling has the talk show in the HBO series. And you play a guy, you play yourself. You play the celebrity David Duchovny.
Well, I play a character named David Duchovny.
Okay. This character, in this case, who has a sexual preference that's, let's say, open to some speculation.
Yes.
And you just do a wonderful job of making Larry Sanders feel uncomfortable. Yeah, where'd that come from?
Well, I had done the Larry Sanders Show one time. Through that, Gary Shandling and I became friends. And this was a year later, and he and I were talking, and I said, I'd love to come do the show again. And he said, sure, you know, come up with an idea, and we'll whatever you want to do. If I like it, we'll do it. And I called back sometime later, and I said, I think it would be great if I had a crush on you, but I'm straight, and I don't understand it. And it's a real crush. I just don't get it. And you're the only guy that I have a crush on. And he said, that does sound funny. Let's try to do that. And they wrote it up, and I just thought, my instinct is always to play it real first and to just, you know, commit to the reality of the desire. So I thought, you know, it's just going to be really funny if you're not winking at all. Don't wink at all. You know, what's funniest is commitment, not winking to me. So I thought, yeah, just caress his cheek and, you know, tell him that you're confused.
Let's hear some of this. This is David Duchovny appearing on the HBO series, The Larry Sanders Show.
Hey, could you give Larry and I just a minute?
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Thanks. You're not upset that I'm taking Carol to the beach, are you?
Don't be silly. Of course not. She's a nice girl.
Oh, good. Well, I'm sorry I'm not going to be on the show with you.
What are you talking about?
My agent called, said the network went ballistic, and they put me back on with Jon Stewart.
Damn it.
No, you're...
They're just not supposed to do that.
You're
damn it!
God, you're really upset, aren't you?
You really care about me, don't you? Are you uncomfortable?
A little bit.
Okay. I'll see you.
See you later.
Bye.
Did you see that?
Yeah, next time, kick him in the balls.
That was David Duchovny on the Larry Sanders Show. You know, I have to say, since you have such a reputation as a Hollywood hunk, was it sort of fun to play off that and as a guy who's struggling with his sexual identity?
Well, you see, what I thought was so funny was that I wasn't really struggling with my sexual identity. This was like a one-time offer, you know, and it was only for Larry Sanders. That's what I found funny about it, was the confusion, the kind of playing with the, playing confused with sexual confusion, you know, and just kind of reducing it so that's what I was attracted to in that kind of a scenario. But in terms of Hollywood hunk and all that, I mean, I don't care, and I don't ever really think about it. I you know, I'm just getting along.
Just a regular guy.
Just getting along. Oh, I was an ugly duckling in high school. All that stuff. No, but. I don't know. That just seems like it's on the outside.
Well, you've come a long way from the graduate program of English in Yale. Not only did you come to Hollywood, not only have you been in a hit series, but you are actually married to a beautiful actress. is it true that you met your wife, Taya Leone, when you both were auditioning to be on The Tonight Show?
That's when we first met. My manager had told me, you should get on The Tonight Show. And I said, well, why would I do that? And she said, well, it's good. You know, people see you out there and then they think of you. I said, well, then I'll go. And she said, well, they don't really want you. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, you kind of have to, you know, you kind of have to have lunch with them and they'll see that you are intelligent and you can speak and perhaps you can tell a story. And I said, I'm auditioning to go on a talk show. And she said, it'll be worth it. Don't worry. I said, all right, I'll go. And so I showed up in the Valley at this restaurant and I sit down. And now I'm not the only one auditioning for a talk show. There's actually a woman there who's auditioning at the same time. This was brutally shocking to me. I couldn't believe that somebody, that I'd have to audition for a talk show and next to somebody. And Taya, she was married at the time, and she was charming and smart and completely dominated the conversation. I became morose and withdrawn and was not invited on The Tonight Show. But Taya was.
God, you failed your lunchtime audition.
Yeah.
Well, David Duchovny, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
David Duchovny from our 2005 interview. His new series on Showtime is called Californication.